agony swells within.
You bet it does, Clary said. She slid down in the seat next to Simon. Anyway, about that girl who thinks you're cute.
Never mind that for a second, Simon said.
Clary blinked at him in surprise.
There's something I wanted to talk to you about.
Furious Mole is not a good name for a band, Clary said immediately.
Not that, Simon said. It's about what we were talking about before. About me not having a girlfriend.
Oh. Clary lifted one shoulder in a shrug. Oh, I don't know. Ask Jada Jones out, she suggested, naming one of the few girls at St. Xavier she actually liked. She's nice, and she likes you.
I don't want to ask Jada Jones out.
Why not? Clary found herself seized with a sudden, unspecific resentment. You don't like smart girls? Still seeking a rockin' bod?
Neither, said Simon, who seemed agitated. I don't want to ask her out, because it wouldn't really be fair to her if I did.
He trailed off. Clary leaned forward. From the corner of her eye, she could see the blonde girl leaning forward too, plainly eavesdropping.
Why not?
Because I like someone else, Simon said.
Okay.
Simon looked faintly greenish, the way he had once when he'd broken his ankle playing soccer in the park and had had to limp home on it. She wondered what on earth about liking someone could possibly have him wound up to such a pitch of anxiety.
You're not gay, are you?
Simon's greenish color deepened. If I were, I would dress better.
So who is it then? Clary asked.
She was about to add that if he were in love with Sheila Barbarino, Eric would kick his ass, when she heard someone cough loudly behind her. It was a derisive sort of cough, the kind of noise someone might make who was trying not to laugh out loud. She turned around. Sitting on a faded green sofa a few feet away from her was Jace. He was wearing the same dark clothes he'd had on the night before in the club. His arms were bare and covered with faint white lines like old scars. His wrists bore wide metal cuffs. She could see the bone handle of a knife protruding from the left one. He was looking right at her, the side of his narrow mouth quirked in amusement. Worse than the feeling of being laughed at was Clary's absolute conviction that he hadn't been sitting there 5 minutes ago.
What is it?
Simon had followed her gaze, but it was obvious from the blank expression on his face that he couldn't see Jace.
But I see you.
She stared at Jace as she thought it, and he raised his left hand to wave at her. He got to his feet and began walking unhurriedly toward the door. Clary's lips parted in surprise. He was leaving, just like that. She felt Simon's hand on her arm. He was saying her name, asking her if something was wrong. She barely heard him.
I'll be right back, she heard herself say, as she sprang off the couch, almost forgetting to set her coffee cup down.
She raced toward the door, leaving Simon staring after her. Clary burst through the doors, terrified that Jace would have vanished into the alley shadows like a ghost. But he was there, slouched against the wall. He had just taken something out of his pocket and was punching buttons on it. He looked up in surprise as the door of the coffee shop fell shut behind her. In the rapidly falling twilight, his hair looked coppery gold.
"Your friend's poetry is terrible," he said.
Clary blinked, caught momentarily off guard.
"What?"
"I said his poetry was terrible. Sounds like he ate a dictionary and started vomiting up words at random."
"I don't care about Eric's poetry."
Clary was furious.
"I want to know why you're following me."
"Who said I was following you?"
"Nice try. And you were eavesdropping, too. Do you want to tell me what this is about, or should I just call the police?"
"And tell them what?" Jace said witheringly. "That invisible people are bothering you. Trust me, little girl. The police aren't going to arrest someone they can't see."
"I told you before, my name is not Little Girl," she said through her teeth. "It's Clary."
"I know," he said. "Pretty name. Like the herb, Clary Sage. In the old days, people thought eating the seeds would let you see the fair folk. Did you know that?"
"I have no idea what you're talking about."
"You don't know much, do you?" he said. There was a lazy contempt in his gold eyes. "You seem to be a mundane like any other mundane, yet you can see me. It's a conundrum."
"What's a mundane?"
"Someone of the human world. Someone like you."
"But you're human," Clary said.
"I am," he said. "But I'm not like you."
There was no defensiveness in his tone.
He sounded like he didn't care if she believed him or not.
You think you're better. That's why you were laughing at us.
I was laughing at you because declarations of love amuse me, especially when unrequited, he said. And because your Simon is one of the most mundane mundanes I've ever encountered. And because Hodge thought you might be dangerous, but if you are, you certainly don't know it.
I'm dangerous? Clary echoed in astonishment. I saw you kill someone last night. I saw you drive a knife up under his ribs and...
And I saw him slash at you with fingers like razor blades. I saw you cut and bleeding, and now you look as if nothing ever touched you.
I may be a killer, Jay said, but I know what I am. Can you say the same?
I'm an ordinary human being, just like you said. Who's Hodge?
My tutor, and I wouldn't be so quick to brand myself as ordinary if I were you. He leaned forward. Let me see your right hand.
My right hand? Clary echoed.
He nodded.
If I show you my hand, will you leave me alone?
Certainly.
His voice was edged with amusement. She held out her right hand grudgingly. It looked pale in the half-light spilling from the windows, the knuckles dotted with a light dusting of freckles. Somehow she felt as exposed as if she were pulling up her shirt and showing him her naked chest. He took her hand in his and turned it over.
Nothing.
He sounded almost disappointed.
You're not left-handed, are you?
No. Why?
He released her hand with a shrug.
All shadow-hunted children get marked with the voyance rune on their right hands, or left, if they're left-handed like I am, when they're still young. It's a permanent rune that helps us see the magical world.
He showed her the back of his left hand. It looked perfectly normal to her.
I don't see anything, she said.
Let your mind relax, he suggested. Wait for it to come to you, like waiting for something to rise to the surface of water.
You're crazy.
But she relaxed, gazing at his hand, seeing the tiny lines across the knuckles, the long joints of the fingers. It jumped out at her suddenly, flashing like a don't walk sign. A black design like an eye across the back of his hand. She blinked and it vanished.
A tattoo?
He smiled smugly and lowered his hand.
I thought you could do it. And it's not a tattoo, it's a mark. They're runes burned into our skin. Different marks do different things. Some are permanent, but the majority vanish when they've been used.
That's why your arms aren't all inked up today? She asked, even when I concentrate?
That's exactly why.
He sounded pleased with himself.
I knew you had the sight, at least.
He glanced up at the sky.
It's nearly full dark. We should go.
We? I thought you were going to leave me alone.
I lied, Jace said without a shred of embarrassment. Hodge said I have to bring you to the Institute with me. He wants to talk to you.
Why would he want to talk to me?
Because you know about us now.
About us? She echoed. You mean people like you. People who believe in demons.
People who kill them, said Jace. We're called shadow hunters. At least, that's what we call ourselves. The Downworlders have less complimentary names for us.
Downworlders?
The Night Children, Warlocks, the Fae, the magical folk of this world.
Clary shook her head.
Don't stop there. I suppose there are also, what, mermaids and werewolves and zombies?
Of course there are, Jace informed her. There are reasons those stories exist. They're based in fact, even if mundanes think they're myth. Shadowhunters have a saying, all the stories are true. Although, he added, to be fair, you'll mostly find zombies farther south, where Vodun priests are.
What about mummies? Do they only hang around Egypt?
Don't be ridiculous. No one believes in mummies.
They don't?
Of course not, Jace said. Look, Hodge will explain all this to you when you see him.
Clary crossed her arms over her chest.
What if I don't want to see him?
Well, that's your problem. You can come either willingly or unwillingly.
Clary couldn't believe her ears.
Are you threatening to kidnap me?
If you want to look at it that way, Jace said. Yes.
Clary opened her mouth to protest angrily, but was interrupted by a strident buzzing noise. Her phone was ringing again.
Go ahead and answer that if you'd like, Jace said generously.
The phone stopped ringing, then started up again, loud and insistent. Clary frowned. Her mom must really be freaking out. She half turned away from Jace and began digging in her bag. By the time she unearthed the phone, it was on its third set of rings. She raised it to her ear.
Mom? Oh, Clary. Oh, thank God.
A sharp prickle of alarm ran up Clary's spine. Her mother sounded panicked.
Listen to me.
It's all right, Mom. I'm fine. I'm on my way home.
No!
Terror scraped Jocelyn's voice raw.
Don't come home. Do you understand me, Clary? Don't you dare come home. Go to Simon's. Go straight to Simon's house and stay there until I can...
A noise in the background interrupted her. The sound of something falling, shattering, something heavy striking the floor.
Mom!
Clary shouted into the phone.
Mom, are you all right?
A loud buzzing noise came from the phone. Clary's mother's voice cut through the static.
Just promise me you won't come home. Go to Simon's and call Luke. Tell him that he's found me.
Her words were drowned out by a heavy crash like splintering wood.
Who's found you? Mom, did you call the police?
Her frantic question was cut off by a noise Clary would never forget. A harsh, slithering noise, followed by a thump. Clary heard her mother draw in a sharp breath before speaking, her voice eerily calm.
I love you, Clary.
The phone went dead.
Mom!
Clary shrieked into the phone.
Mom, are you there?
Call ended, the screen said. But why would her mother have hung up like that?
Clary,
Jace said. It was the first time she'd ever heard him say her name.
What's going on?
Clary ignored him. Feverishly, she hit the button that dialed her home number. There was no answer except a double-tone busy signal. Clary's hands had begun to shake uncontrollably. When she tried to redial, the phone slipped out of her shaking grasp and hit the pavement hard. She dropped to her knees to retrieve it, but it was dead, a long crack visible across the front.
Damn it!
Almost in tears, she threw the phone down.
Stop that.
Jace hauled her to her feet, his hand gripping her wrist.
Has something happened?
Give me your phone, Clary said, grabbing the black metal oblong out of his shirt pocket. I have to...
It's not a phone,
Jace said, making no move to get it back.
It's a sensor. You won't be able to use it.
But I need to call the police.
Tell me what happened first.
She tried to yank her wrist back, but his grip was incredibly strong.
I can help you.
Rage flooded through Clary, a hot tide through her veins. Without even thinking about it, she struck out at his face, her nails raking his cheek. He jerked back in surprise. Tearing herself free, Clary ran toward the lights of 7th Avenue. When she reached the street, she spun around, half expecting to see Jace at her heels. But the alley was empty. For a moment, she stared uncertainly into the shadows. Nothing moved inside them. She spun on her heel and ran for home. Chapter 4. Ravener. The night had gotten even hotter, and running home felt like swimming as fast as she could through boiling soup. At the corner of her block, Clary got trapped at a don't walk sign. She jittered up and down impatiently on the balls of her feet, while traffic whizzed by in a blur of headlights. She tried to call home again, but Jace hadn't been lying. His phone wasn't a phone. At least, it didn't look like any phone Clary had ever seen before. The sensor's buttons didn't have numbers on them, just more of those bizarre symbols, and there was no screen. Jogging up the street toward her house, she saw that the second floor windows were lit, the usual sign that her mother was home.
Okay, she told herself, everything's fine.
But her stomach tightened the moment she stepped into the entryway. The overhead light had burned out, and the foyer was in darkness. The shadow seemed full of secret movement. Shivering, she started upstairs.
And just where do you think you're going?
Said a voice. Clary whirled.
What?
She broke off. Her eyes were adjusting to the dimness, and she could see the shape of a large armchair drawn up in front of Madame Dorothea's closed door. The old woman was wedged into it like an overstuffed cushion. In the dimness, Clary could see only the round shape of her powdered face, the white lace fan in her hand, the dark yawning gap of her mouth when she spoke.
Your mother, Dorothea said, has been making a god-awful racket up there.
What's she doing? Moving furniture?
I don't think...
And the stairwell lights burned out. Did you notice?
Dorothea wrapped her fan against the arm of the chair.
Can't your mother get her boyfriend in to change it?
Luke isn't...
The skylight needs washing, too. It's filthy. No wonder it's nearly pitch black in here.
Luke is not the landlord, Clary wanted to say, but didn't. This was typical of her elderly neighbor. Once she got Luke to come around and change the light bulb, she'd ask him to do 100 other things. pick up her groceries, grout her shower. Once, she'd made him chop up an old sofa with an axe so she could get it out of the apartment without taking the door off the hinges. Clary sighed.
I'll ask.
You'd better. Dorothea snapped her fan shut with a flick of her wrist. Clary's sense that something was wrong only increased when she reached the apartment door. It was unlocked, hanging slightly open, spilling a wedge-shaped shaft of light onto the landing. With a feeling of increasing panic, she pushed the door open. Inside the apartment, the lights were on, all the lamps, everything turned up to full brightness. The glow stabbed into her eyes. Her mother's keys and pink handbag were on the small wrought iron shelf by the door where she always left them.
Mom! Clary called out. Mom, I'm home!
There was no reply. She went into the living room. Both windows were open, yards of gauzy white curtains blowing in the breeze like restless ghosts. Only when the wind dropped and the curtains settled did Clary see that the cushions had been ripped from the sofa and scattered around the room. Some were torn lengthwise, cotton innards spilling onto the floor. The bookshelves had been tipped over, their contents scattered. The piano bench lay on its side, gaping open like a wound, Jocelyn's beloved music book spewing out. Most terrifying were the paintings. Every single one had been cut from its frame and ripped into strips, which were scattered across the floor. It must have been done with a knife. Canvas was almost impossible to tear with your bare hands. The empty frames looked like bones picked clean. Clary felt a scream rising up in her chest.
Mom, she shrieked. Where are you? Mommy!
She hadn't called Jocelyn Mommy since she was 8. Heart pumping, she raced into the kitchen. It was empty, the cabinet doors open, a smashed bottle of Tabasco sauce spilling peppery red liquid onto the linoleum. Her knees felt like bags of water. She knew she should race out of the apartment, get to a phone, call the police. But all those things seemed distant. She needed to find her mother first, needed to see that she was all right. What if robbers had come? What if her mother had put up a fight? What kind of robbers didn't take a wallet with them? Or the TV, the DVD player, or the expensive laptops? She was at the door to her mother's bedroom now. For a moment, it looked as if this room, at least, had been left untouched. Jocelyn's handmade flowered quilt was folded carefully on the duvet. Clary's own face smiled back at her from the top of the bedside table, 5 years old, gap-toothed smile framed by strawberry hair. A sob rose in Clary's chest. Mom, she cried inside. What happened to you? Silence answered her. No, not silence. A noise sounded through the apartment, raising the short hairs along the nape of her neck. Like something being knocked over, a heavy object striking the floor with a dull thud. The thud was followed by a dragging, slithering noise, and it was coming toward the bedroom. Stomach contracting in terror, Clary scrambled to her feet and turned around slowly. For a moment, she thought the doorway was empty, and she felt a wave of relief. Then she looked down. It was crouched against the floor, a long, scaled creature with a cluster of flat black eyes set dead center in the front of its domed skull. Something like a cross between an alligator and a centipede. It had a thick, flat snout and a barbed tail that whipped menacingly from side to side. Multiple legs bunched underneath it as it readied itself to spring. A shriek tore itself out of Clary's throat. She staggered backward, tripped, and fell, just as the creature lunged at her. She rolled to the side, and it missed her by inches, sliding along the wood floor, its claws gouging deep grooves. A low growl bubbled from its throat. She scrambled to her feet and ran toward the hallway, but the thing was too fast for her. It sprang again, landing just above the door, where it hung like a gigantic malignant spider, staring down at her with its cluster of eyes. Its jaws opened slowly, showing a row of fanged teeth spilling greenish drool. A long black tongue flickered out between its jaws as it gurgled and hissed. To her horror, Clary realized that the noises it was making were words.
"Girl," it hissed. "Flesh, blood, to eat, oh, to eat."
It began to slither slowly down the wall. Some part of Clary had passed beyond terror into a sort of icy stillness. The thing was on its feet now, crawling toward her. Backing away, she seized a heavy framed photo off the bureau beside her, herself and her mother and Luke at Coney Island, about to go on the bumper cars, and flung it at the monster. The photograph hit its midsection and bounced off, striking the floor with the sound of shattering glass. The creature didn't seem to notice. It came on toward her, broken glass splintering under its feet.
Bones to crunch, to suck out the marrow, to drink the veins.
Clary's back hit the wall. She could back up no farther. She felt a movement.